Welcome to Movie Maniacs. Mike Rags and Chuck Curry discussing the greatest movies of all time and all the new films in theaters and streaming that you need to know about. Like us, rate us, share us. Now, here are your hosts, Mike Rags and Chuck Curry.
We are back for another edition of Movie Maniacs. Mike Rags, Chuck Curry, talking about the greatest movies of all time and the new ones that are not out in theaters, basically streaming now because of COVID-19. As we move farther and farther along with this virus, we're just spinning our wheels as far as movie theaters go. We'll talk a little bit more about that. More movies getting pushed up to 2021. Some big ones, too, that Chuck and I talked about last week, kind of being benchmarks as to whether or not we're going to see anything for real in 2020. And since it is October, Chuck and I decided this month we're going to try to revolve all our lists around horror movies. Later on in the show, we will rank our 10 favorite horror heroes of all time. Chuck, let's bring him in right now. But before you say hello, Chuck, I have to tell you this, and I'm not sure if you even know about it. I'm flipping through Netflix this morning, trying to see, you know, what do I want to watch later on tonight? I look at their top 10 all the time, you know, see what's there, what's new. I see this film called Welcome to Sudden Death. I'm like, what is this nonsense? Now, I look it up, I put it on. It is actually a retelling of Sudden Death, Jean-Claude Van Damme's, a classic movie that we both love, starring Michael J. White, who I think was Spawn, right? And wasn't he most recently in Marvel here? Yeah.
Michael J. White. He was also a mobster in The Dark Knight.
That's right. He is a security guard at a basketball game with two kids at the arena, get taken over by terrorists.
So it's a remake?
I went to IMDb. I looked it up. It's actually billed somewhat as a sequel to Sudden Death, but I can't see
when was it made? What year?
This year. It's out now. It's brand new.
Yeah, okay, how was it?
I just started watching it. I didn't have time. Like I said, it was right before
I gotta catch that one. What's it called?
So it's actually interesting enough, though, Gene Quintano, the screenwriter for the original, is half billed as a screenwriter for this film. And I'm telling you, from the first 15 minutes, it is a carbon copy. But, I mean, Michael J. White, the acting in this is so pathetic. This looks like one of those films, Chuck, that, you know, you'll laugh throughout the entire film. But I thought it was interesting that it was basically a remake of Sudden Death. So not only are we fans of this movie.
No cameo by Jean-Claude Van Damme as the mascot?
I looked at the credits in IMDb. He's not in there uncredited at all. I don't know if there's a mascot fight yet. I haven't gotten to that.
Wow.
But,
exciting.
Welcome to Sudden Death. I guess, we're, you know, why not? When Hollywood's out of ideas, when's Passenger 58? Is that coming out soon? I mean, enough is enough with these remakes. But I thought it was interesting. And Michael J. White, to me, lacks very, very, very much of the charisma that Jean-Claude Van Damme had back in the day. But who knows? I'll watch it the rest of the way. I just thought I wanted to start the show that way because I know we're fans. I had no idea this was even being made, yet it's on Netflix now for everybody to consume. And it's actually in their top 10, so people are consuming it, I suppose.
It is unbelievable. You know, let's just bounce right into that. You talk about streaming, what's at movies. Here's the deal. There's nothing new in terms of why releases at the theater this weekend. It's just basically go see Tenet, or go see an older classic movie, or go to one of the art houses is open and see maybe an obscure independent film. But in terms of streaming, a couple of big stories. First one that I read, and it really took me somewhat by surprise. Bill and Ted Face the Music, Mike.
Yes.
Okay, August 28th comes out simultaneously between theatrical. I think they put it on around 1,000 screens upward around the country. That some of the theaters were open, some theaters that were open wouldn't take it because it was theatrical and streaming the same day. Right? So no multiplex would take it. We booked it at the theater I'm involved in. Okay. So theatrically, film does $3.3 million in its run. Streaming.
I saw this. Yeah.
$33 million.
Yes.
Now the studio makes like 90% of streaming money.
And that is not the design you want to hear, Chuck, if you want to go to the movies to see.
Was it? I mean, were you surprised by that?
I was surprised. I was surprised by that number. You know, because then you're going to see these low budget stuff like the model you were talking about. Low budget movies or mid budget movies are going to go streaming. The big ones will go to theaters eventually. And that's how the model
But well, I do think there is I still think there's a massive difference between the movie you just described, because there's no marketing.
Oh, right.
Right now, who knows what the budget is? A couple million? I don't know what they spend. No marketing. They solely rely on you. Well, Netflix bought that movie, so it's not on VOD. But any movie on VOD that does $33 million in business obviously has a marketing campaign. I think they said the marketing campaign on Bill and Ted was upward of $15 million. So when this movie goes on HBO or, you know, the regular cable stations and then Blu-ray and DVD, it's going to be in the black. It's going to make some money, maybe $10, $15 million profit ultimately, which is really good for that vehicle. Another big story that broke is the Gerard Butler. I know he's one of your favorites.
Oh, this is huge.
Greenland, right? Which is an action disaster film. I think it was supposed to hit theaters this month or next month. It's released overseas. It's made about $45 million. It's shot on a $30 million budget. HBO Max pays $30 million for the exclusive rights to air that, bypassing a theatrical release in the United States.
Actually, Amazon won the bidding on that, actually.
What happened, I think that's overseas, Amazon. Overseas and HBO Max domestically. That's from what I heard, but I could be wrong. But anyway,
$30 million. I think that was supposed to be a summer release initially.
Where did they get $30 million for that movie? Like, just amazing.
Well, come on, it's Gerard Butler, so a lot of the – I mean, he's going to get most of that money, right? You know, another interesting one, even a bigger coup for HBO Max, which I could not believe, a Robert Zemeckis film is going straight to HBO Max, his remake and retelling of The Witches, which stars Anne Hathaway.
I saw that too.
And Octavio Spencer, they will co-star. It's going to HBO Max, coming out right before Halloween. Robert Zemeckis, I mean, this is big, huge news, Chuck. Movies like this going straight to streaming again. Will it make me go buy HBO Max? Probably not.
Yeah, they're investing a boatload of cash into HBO Max.
They are
rolling the dice.
What they
do is, in the beginning, they overpay to get subscribership.
So you got Greenland coming out. You've got what's in theaters? They're banking on The War with Grandpa. Next weekend.
Well, Bond, let's talk about Bond.
Two big ones is Bond and Fast and Furious 9, Fate of the Fear, whatever the hell it's called. They're both going to 2021. And we talked about last week how if James Bond doesn't get released, we're probably not going to see anything get released.
The dominoes are all going to fall. There's no way you're going to see Wonder Woman at Christmas. It's not going to happen. I got to tell you, some of the bigger directors like Nolan and a few others, I think Cameron – wrote an open letter to Congress asking in a stimulus bill to help the theater chains. They might need that money, Mike. I mean, look, it's very bleak. If you really think, unlike some of the more moderate deals like Alamo Drafthouse can do a lot of interesting things with revivals and spice it up where people might come back to those theaters. But, the multiplexes, if they show The Dark Knight or Beetlejuice or some of this other stuff, it's just not going to be enough people. It's not. Having said that, I just want to point out, we were one of the theaters that booked, because it was offered by Disney, Hocus Pocus.
Yeah.
And we had 18 people actually come to the 7 o'clock last night, which is the biggest showing of any movie since Corona, believe it or not.
Hocus Pocus, is out in our theater here as well at AMC. And, I remember seeing that movie back in, 1993, Disney film. It was moderately okay for families. I never expected for it to become...
It has a cult following. Huge.
Unbelievable cult following.
It does.
I know a lot of people from the 30 to 40 age range that this is their Halloween movie, Chuck, that they grew up watching.
It's really interesting.
Year.
I'm sure the cast, Bette Midler, Sarah Jessica Parker, and Kathy Najimy probably look and say... Really?
Yeah.
We didn't expect that.
Yeah. And I know there was oftentimes talk of a sequel after sequel after sequel.
I think they are going to do a sequel for Disney Plus, though. That is going to happen.
I think last year they announced some sort of sequel. And
let me tell you, they're going to get big paychecks, and Disney's going to get a lot of subscribers for that.
That will do very well. It made $40 million back in the day.
Wow.
But you
not
know,
it's a critical
like
darling,
that,
but public liked it.
Yeah, it's movies like that that just grow, and when you do a revival of some sort, people really come out. And I just wanted to add James Bond, April 21st, 2021, and then Memorial Day weekend, you'll have the new Fast and Furious movie, Chuck. I mean, one thing's
will
for sure.
Will we?
Yeah, I mean, I don't know. Sooner or later, they have to release these movies somehow. Let's go to some other movie news and a big release date, Chuck, for things that we know we're going to see. You and I are both huge fans of Cobra Kai, a release date of January 8th for season number 3. I'm bringing everybody back. From what I understand, too, Okinawa will play a part in this upcoming season. And they did sign on for a season number 4 as well, Chuck.
Do you know Cobra Kai right now is Netflix's highest rated program, doubling, I think, Lucifer, which is number 2 right now?
I will tell you that the filmmakers who took care of this series play perfect homage to the entire series, not just one.
Hands down.
Not just one, all of them. And
you know they're going to delve into the third installment too.
You know, they haven't, you know, the interesting thing is it's not a very good movie and it really doesn't fill.
You think they could get Hilary Swank to come aboard sometime?
Boy, that would be a coup. Well, you know, she did do that big series with Netflix Away, which is doing really well. Maybe somehow they can throw money her way to pop
and
up.
Listen, I'm sure Netflix, the fact that YouTube Red sold it to Netflix was great because it took a condensed base of people watching it and really broadened it. And listen, The Karate Kid is a classic.
Yes,
I mean,
it is
a classic. It's generational. And this series is awesome.
Yep, it really is. And it really layers out every
single
character.
It's fun to see Ralph Macchio back as Daniel LaRusso. But let's be honest, the heart of that show is William Zabka.
No doubt. No, and the kids are really good too. The kid who plays Miguel is
the Johnny character, Johnny Lawrence. He's all in, and he's really mm-hmm. the best acting I've ever seen him do.
Yeah, it's great stuff. If you haven't caught it, I mean, you're way behind the curve here, people. Most people have. So look for that in January. It's done. They finished filming. It's edited. They're just waiting on the release to January. Chuck, a lot of movie news this past week. Another one coming from James Cameron. And again, does anybody even give a crap anymore?
No.
He says Avatar 2 is finished. Avatar 3 is about 75% finished. And I'm thinking to myself, nobody cares.
No, I don't think so.
I don't think anybody's going to care.
And God forbid that he tries to reinvigorate 3D back into our life. No.
Oh, my God. Well, you know, I don't know
That's
about
it.
That.
There is no 3D.
But
basically,
3D
is gone.
But does anybody even remember the characters from the first film? You know, that movie made $600 million, but by no means does it live in the lore of filmgoers.
I don't think so. Not at all. Here's the thing. I remember watching Avatar in a theater going, wow, this 3D is really perfected. And then when I walked out, I was like, but what was the story? I didn't remember the movie at all.
Yeah.
I had to watch it again on Blu-ray, to be honest, to really – and it's okay. It's an okay movie with a good villain.
Yeah, I liked it.
A good score, but it's the least in the Cameron library, other than Piranha 2.
Well, that's borderline, too. Some might argue that. Another big news is Barry Jenkins is going to take the realm away from Jon Favreau for the Lion King sequel. Of course, Barry Jenkins, the Moonlight director. I love the first one. I thought they did a really good job, the computer animation with the animals. But B, it's like, you know, where's the storyline going to go? What are we doing?
It's a prequel, I think.
Well, I don't know.
I heard it was a prequel.
Well, and it's probably – I can imagine it being a Disney Plus film too, not even making it to theaters.
I don't know. We'll see.
We'll see what happens with that. Also, I found it interesting too, Chuck, and you know, no big surprise, but Spielberg has completely pulled out of Indy 5. David Koepp, the screenwriter, may confirm that he is not going to be back, and it'll be the Mangold guy will direct it. But when you said, you know, this is not coming out for another 2 years and Harrison Ford is going to be 80. Well, I mean, he's going to rival Clint Eastwood and coming up on screen and making movies.
You think we could do a multiverse and Tom Selleck is Indiana Jones too?
Tim Matheson as well. He screen tested for.
All right.
So
why not?
Maybe let's bring them all back. Yeah. I just don't know. Speaking of Clint Eastwood, you know, he signed on to do another film. As an actor and director called Cry Macho, I mean, he's well over 90, And you know what's interesting about this project?
I heard it's sort of a road trip movie with him and a young kid. Listen, I embrace it. If Issa wants to act, I'm all for it. I love The Mule, man. I like that movie a lot. He starred and directed that film. He's 90, still doing it. Richard Jewell was a pretty good movie, really good movie. He's still got gas in the tank, Mike.
Somehow, and it's interesting about this project. It was actually the script was originally written in the 70s. It was going to be made. It was actually production started in the 90s with Roy Scheider in the lead role. And then Schwarzenegger got the script, and this was going to be his return to movies after his governorship. And it got left in limbo, and he ended up doing The Last Stand. So this movie's been around a while, and Eastwood's grabbed it and gone from there.
I got one more thing. Zac Efron signing on to play the lead in a big screen remake of Firestarter, Stephen King's material. Let's be honest, the original Firestarter gets a lot of play on TV, but I think it's a pretty bad movie. And it's one of the few films that make George C. Scott look like a bad actor.
George C. Scott, Martin Sheen, Art Carney. I mean, there's a lot of people that Drew Barrymore.
I mean, when you watch George C. Scott in that movie, you go, wow.
Yeah.
That director was missing. I mean, that movie's just bad.
But it is ripe for a remake because it is a very good book.
I guess so.
Yeah,
he'll play the father.
Well, nobody's even seen that movie, Chuck. So David Keith played the dad in that. Good actor, good actor.
Yeah, that's just Zac Efron will play that role.
I also saw the movie for Francis and the Godfather is going to be made. It's about the behind the scenes of the Godfather getting made. Two of our best actors are going to be in it. Oscar Isaac's going to play.
I want to see that movie.
Yeah, Oscar Isaac will play Francis Ford Coppola. Jake Gyllenhaal will play Robert Evans. That is definitely something I want to see. You can't get.
You know what I want to know? I want to know the truth about the Frank Sinatra.
Yeah, absolutely. And I wonder too, are they going to also, who's going to cast as the stars of the movie, you know, too? Will there be a Brando? Will there be a Pacino? I mean, would Oscar Isaac lend itself more to be Pacino than Francis Ford Coppola? So I wonder how much they're going to delve into the actual actors.
I like this idea a lot. They don't make movies like this anymore. I embrace this. This is a good thing.
Also, I didn't see this, and maybe we'll just wrap up here. Did you see The Father of the Bride Netflix reunion?
I did not. I heard about it, though.
Did that air? Because I can't find it anywhere.
No, it did.
It did.
I'm pretty sure it did. Yeah,
and everybody was back.
I saw them on the bottom. Yeah, yeah.
I got to check it. I can't find it anywhere. That's why I'm asking you if it's actually going to get, you know, shown on Netflix. All right, Chuck. We're going to get to our horror heroes in a little bit. I forgot to ask, and you know, here's how bad things are. I never ask anymore, but did you get to see anything?
No.
Well, you don't have to sound so depressed about it. I did show Halloween to my daughter. You want to know what she thought?
The original?
Yeah.
Yeah, tell me.
A huge thumbs up. She liked it a lot.
All right.
Although,
how old is your daughter?
She's 10.
Okay, let me ask you a question. In the opening scene, when you see a little nudity, how do you feel as a father watching that?
It was a little awkward. The PJ Souls later on.
Did she comment on it or just watch?
No, I guess she just kind of figures it is what
it
is.
But she liked the movie.
She did. Although, you know, you
watch it with the lights off?
Yeah. Again, watching it with a 10-year-old, it seems it's just the world we live in. The pacing of the film, you're waiting for her to get impatient and say, when's somebody going to die? And because in reality, Michael really doesn't kill too many people in this film.
And most of it's in the latter act.
Way latter act. But the chills are there. The Halloween is definitely there. The setting. So I think she really got a kick out of that. And I showed her the trailer for Halloween 2. I think
my favorite shot in Halloween is when Corbin has that long shot of when Myers is carrying the body out of the house.
Great scene. And the little boy sees it. Yeah.
Yes. That's my favorite shot in that whole film.
Yeah, it's a great scene. I like the scene too, where she's leaning against the closet and there's darkness behind her.
Yeah.
And all of a sudden you see just the shadow come across and his face emerge. That just great stuff. And when he sits up and I asked her scariest part, she said it was the closet scene is definitely.
It always, unlike a lot of Halloween type movies, it always did a great job at capturing the day, not the night, but the day of Halloween.
It does.
Gives you that feel. And that's why that movie resonated in its time and still continues to resonate.
And in the immortal worlds of PJ Souls, totally. It totally does. Totally does. We'll talk more about Halloween, I'm sure, in a little bit. But let's do Fast Five, Chuck. We've got a real good, solid five actors. I say who they are. You think of the first role that comes to mind. We'll start off a little more difficult. Well, lesser known actors, and have a little fun with this. You and I are both big fans of Liev Schreiber. Of course, has done a lot of great work recently on Ray Donovan. I haven't watched the show. I heard it's great, but he's been around a long time. I say Liev Schreiber. What do you think of?
I think of Ray Donovan. He is Ray Donovan. I mean, he made Ray Donovan like James Gandolfini made this Tony Soprano. He's really that good in it.
I've always liked him, though. Always. Even back when he was in Scream 2 and Scream 3, I thought that character was very good. I was upset when they killed him off in Scream 3. I thought he was really good in those movies.
Yeah.
Remember, he played Robert Thorne in the Omen remake. I thought he was very good in that. Not many people saw that film, Chuck. And he was also in the Sum of All Fears. I thought he was good in that film, too, with the Jack Ryan film as well. Always a good actor. He's in the Manchurian
Candidate. Well, you know, just want to give a plug. That Omen remake, the actor... The little boy who played Damien in that film lived in Strasbourg. I knew him very well. Seamus Davy Fitzpatrick is currently living in New York City, but comes back. I did a Q&A interview when he had a small part in a movie called The Dinner with Richard Gere. And,
yeah, it was a good movie.
He's a good kid.
Not much of a career after that, though, huh? Unfortunately.
He's done a lot of episodic TV. Like he still does casting auditions, and he's still hitting the beat.
An average movie, though, the remake. Again, very unnecessary. Julia Stiles was the mom in that too, right?
Yeah, yes.
Not many people saw it. All right, let's move on to a guy I always thought would make a decent James Bond. He's probably too old for the role now, and I always liked him. Clive Owen is 56 years old this week, and he's getting up there, Chuck, so he's not going to be Bond, but I always thought he could be. Owen.
I like Inside Job.
Inside Man? Yeah, Inside Man. Very
Spike Lee
good.
Movie with Denzel. Yeah. He's really good. And also Children of Men, right?
Yeah, Children of Men.
You know, I'll tell you a quick story about Clive Owen. When I used to blog, I used to go on other blogs, and when Ain't It Cool News was really popular back in the day, mm-hmm. before I completely fell out of bed. Mm-hmm. And I remember they were getting ready to they're talking about the remake of the Poseidon Adventure, right? And I was curious, like, who are they going to cast? Who's going to be Reverend Scott? What are they going to do? And before what they did to it, and there is no Reverend Scott, Ain't It Cool News had an announcement, Clive Owen in negotiations to play Reverend Scott in the Poseidon Adventure remake. That would have been really cool.
That would have been awesome. I think that would have been perfect casting, to be honest with you.
I still think, for me, Denzel Washington would have been a great Reverend Scott.
Hard to argue.
Yeah, and you know who would have been good for me also? Matthew Fox of Lost would have been a good Reverend Scott for me. Because I looked at Jack on Lost sort of like that sort of like heroic leader who ultimately pays the price. I like him too.
No, not was it? Did Rucker Hauer play him in the TV? That was
Bishop Smith. What was his name?
I don't know.
He was a little passive for my taste in that movie. No.
Speaking of Clive Owen, I know The Nick is very popular too. I've never seen that show. I know he's really good in that, and he does a great cameo.
It's interesting how we bounce and veer into different. Different areas.
He's the villain in Gemini Man.
Didn't mention Beyond the Poseidon Adventure this week yet.
Not yet. Right. We're still plenty
Let me know
of show
if we
left.
Need to. All right.
By the way, Clive Owen, great cameo as himself in Curb Your Enthusiasm's last season. Here's an interesting one, Chuck. Armand DeSante, who, you know, he's been around a long time. He's 71 years old. I remember the first time I saw him was playing Stallone's brother in Paradise Alley back in the day, but he's done a lot of, you know, he plays the hitman a lot in the.
He was born for those roles. No,
he is. But is there a role?
I can't say off the top of my head.
I always thought it was interesting that Stallone threw him the villain part in Judge Dredd, big action movie that came out. You know, it bombed. But to have Omar Nasante as the bad guy in that always was interesting to me. But nothing stands out for Armand DeSanto?
I would have to look at his bio. I gotta be honest.
Well, that's interesting. Q&A. Yeah. He's very good in Q&A too with Nick Nolte and
you're going Tony. Back there now.
Yeah, I'm going way back. Well,
yeah.
And wasn't he one of the boyfriends in Little Darlings? He was, right?
He was, I believe.
It was Matt Dillon and him.
Well, you're really going back.
Well, listen, that's why
I'm
here. All right, we'll get a little easier now. Maybe harder because it'd be hard to pick one. But one of the great actresses of all time, Susan Sarandon, is 74 years old. I say Susan Sarandon.
Who do Delmer you think? And Louise.
Annie Savoy, Bull Durham.
About The Client? That's a signature role.
The Client.
She's great in it. She's always good.
How about Stepmom? I know a lot of people love her and Stepmom too.
Yeah.
To me, it's Louise. And Annie Savoy. I mean, Bull Durham. Boy, oh boy. Hard to pick between the two of those. But you're right. Always good. And I loved her in with the Dead Man Walking as the sister in that Tim Robbins film. She's been
good in a lot of different things, Mike.
Yeah, always. And last but certainly not least, probably could do an entire show on him, but not many listeners would care because only Chuck and I would care. Charlton Heston would have been 97 years old this weekend, Chuck. Ben-Hur, Moses, Charlton Heston to you.
The first one has got to be Moses in the Ten Commandments.
So that's what you think of.
No actor could be that commanding on screen. I mean, ask Christian Bale. Planet Apes would be number two.
Really?
Yeah, I love the Omega Man.
See, you're a little...
Even though I'm a big fan of Earthquake because I love the genre.
Yeah.
In this case, I always said to myself, was that with the right casting, Charlton Heston in that movie?
Of course it was.
Let me ask you a question. They were banting about when they did Earthquake in 74. They toyed with the idea of casting James Caan as Stuart Graff.
Right.
I think that would have been a very different movie, and I think he would have brought a subtext and a layering of that character in that movie that would have been a completely different product. I love Heston. I love him, but I'm just saying I didn't like his wardrobe in the film. Those shoes, Mike. I mean, I love the Jeep though, That's why I drive a Jeep to this day. When I saw Heston drive that Jeep, I was like, when I get older, I got to have one of those.
Awesome. To me, okay. It's the back-to-back of Earthquake and Alan Murdoch, Airport 75. That is what I grew up. And then, you know, to a lesser degree, 2 Minute Warnings and the Gray Lady Downs.
I tell you an Earthquake, quickly, when he's under the tunnel toward the end and they're trying, you know, digging a path to Wilson Plaza, George Kennedy's cop characters with him, and a emergency worker looks at Heston and says, "We're not going with you," and then Heston goes, "I won't be alone." He's going with me, and he looks at George Kennedy. I love that scene.
I love this.
And then George Kennedy like just nods his head up and down like with a grin.
I love the scene in Airport 75 when when Kennedy explodes on the press in the tower, and Charlton Heston's got to calm him down. Just some great stuff. And to me, you know, when he's saying "climb, baby, climb," when he said he's guiding Karen Black, the stewardess is flying the plane. This is what we grew up on, Chuck.
You could argue the most interesting screen presence of all time. You could argue that with him.
Chuck, as a 5-year-old seeing those movies, I physically got upset when he died at the end of Earthquake. And I think I told the story before. My dad and my brother used to tease me that they were making an Earthquake sequel. Yeah, he was on the other end of the, you know, of
you know,
the
I've
tunnel.
Seen I've seen Earthquake probably 100 times. And I'm always baffled when he jumps back, when he looks up at Genevieve Beauvau, who is his, you know, he's having an affair with her, his girlfriend, he's in his strange marriage. And he makes a decision to save his wife, Ava Gardner. He goes under before she does when they both ultimately drown. He drowns first, and she's her head's. That's weird.
Yeah, it is weird and different. You wouldn't see that.
It's so different.
Yeah,
And it is a dark. It is as dark as the blackest night. That movie at the end of that film.
Well, and I remember as a kid, Major Dundee was on right after that film on TV, and I'm sweating bullets, worried sick if he's going to live or die at the end of Major Dundee. And I would do the same for movies like, you know, when he died in Midway. I mean, what am I doing as a 6-year-old?
He liked dying in
the
movies. Like his death scene in the Omega Man is awesome.
Yeah. Well, my point is, why is my dad taking me to see a World War II movie about the South Pacific's greatest battle, Midway? I'm 6 years old. I'll tell you why. Charlton Heston's in it. I had to see it. Yeah. I had to see 2 Minute Warning. I had to see Gray Lady Down, if only to see if he lived or died at the end. And that kind of screen presence, I don't know. Are there kids today worrying if, you know, their favorite actor lives or dies in movies anymore? I'm harking back to a time, Chuck, that we're just never going to get to again. And Charlton Heston reminds me of those times, you know.
Okay.
And I always loved when he popped up, you know, True Lies. And then again in the Wyatt Earp movie Tombstone. It was just good to see him back in his later years. And then obviously we know what road it went down towards the end. But Charlton Heston would have been 96. And I guess for most audience, like you said, he's Moses, for crying out loud. And Ben-Hur, it just...
Nobody could have did what he did in that film.
Nope. An unbelievable career. All right, Chuck, let's talk about some horror movies now. I always preface this by saying, look, Brody 1, Ripley 2, but I don't consider Jaws...
Yeah, I mean, I'm not going there.
Jaws and Alien...
They have to be more pure horror.
Exactly. So we both took those off the list. So if you want to get nitpicky with us, Brody 1, Ripley 2, take those out of the equation.
And I try to do some obscurity to make it fun.
So did I. All right, so I'll start.
Let me start.
You start. All right, you start. 10 through 6, what do you got, and see if any crossover.
Number 10, the character of Jonathan Parker, played by Peter Berg in Wes Craven's 1989 Shocker. Now, Craven tried to sort of reinvent the Freddy Krueger character with Horace Pinker. Here's the thing. First 20 minutes of this movie, Mike, to me, are great. I love it. The setup, everything about it. Yep. This could have been a classic. The movie sort of falls apart because it gets sillier and sillier. It ties itself up at the end. But Peter Berg in this movie is really damn good. And I followed him throughout that film. And I like the film despite its flaws. And I really like his performance here. Number 9, the character of James Cameron, played by Tom Atkins in Night of the Creeps. He says, a classic line, I got good news and bad news. The good news, your dates are here. The bad news, they're dead. He was awesome. Number 8. How about the character Charlie Brewster, played by William Ragsdale in Fright Night?
Good one.
85. He's awesome in that movie. Number 7, how about stunt woman turned actress Patricia Tallman playing Barbara in Tom Savini's remake of Night of the Living Dead? They made her a badass Ripley-like character instead of this passive scaredy cat, and I love that change. And number 6, how about the Losers Club in the remake of It? The kid version.
Yeah.
Pretty good.
Both
list.
Movies. Both movies. The kids pop up in the second one, too. But, yeah, they're good. I almost put one of those kids in my list.
You like my list?
Yeah, it's good. It's good stuff. It's out there. And what was number 9 again? Night of the Creeps?
Yeah.
It's interesting that you put Tom Atkins in one of yours, because Tom Atkins is actually my number 10, but a different movie.
Really?
Dr. Chalice in Halloween 3, Season of the Witch.
I could have put that. That's a good one.
Yep. He's my number 10. I always thought he was the anchor of that film.
He absolutely is.
And I love his ending when he screams into the camera.
Let me just say this. Good actor, right?
Yep.
Definitely a different type of screen for it. I don't think you'd see him starring in movies now.
No.
He's really, he's a big man.
Yeah.
And he's got 6-something. He's stocky. But he's really good.
You know, he had to be pushing, 55 in that film? And that actress in that movie, 25 tops, Chuck. So, you know, that was a little, you know, if you watch that movie now, it is a little off-putting to see their chemistry together, you know. So Dr. Chalice is my number 10. My number 9 is two characters from the same movie, Valentine and Earl from Tremors, Fred Ward and Kevin Bacon, hysterical in that film. I'm sure Laurie Strode is on your list and she's higher. I didn't put her that high only because even after rewatching Halloween, she really doesn't do much in that film. I put Laurie Strode in Halloween H2O as my number 8 because she obviously has – great payoff at the end, and then it diminishes a little. And we talked about this. The next Halloween movie is one of the great film travesties of all time. My number seven is the character of Michelle, played by Mary Elizabeth Winstead in 10 Cloverfield Lane. She's an anchor of that film, and the way she kicks ass in the last 15 minutes, I was adrenalized leaving
the theater. That's really a good pick, too.
Yeah, I was waiting for the 11 Cloverfield Lanes where she goes and kills every alien on the planet. We never got there. I don't know if we ever will. And my number seven is R.J. McCready. That's Kurt Russell's great role in The Thing, where you never know if he actually is The Thing. He could be right. The Thing at the end, too, but very underplayed by Kurt Russell. And he nails it. All right.
That's why I like it. It's underplayed.
Yep. Let me – you didn't go – go through your 10 through 6 again, and then I'll go through mine again.
Jonathan Hawker, played by Peter Berg in Shocker, is number 10. Number 9 is Ray Cameron, the character played by Tom Atkins in Night of the Creeps. Number 8 is Charlie Brewster, the character played by Williams Ragsdale in Fright Night. I love that film. Great 7 – Patricia Tolman is Barbara in Tom Savini's remake, A Night of the Living Dead from 1990. I'm a big fan of that remake also. And number 6, The Losers Club from the remake of It, the kids version.
Good one. All good. And, you know, Peter Berg, he's a great director now. People forget. He was a good screen presence back in the day. He didn't make a lot of movies, but whenever he was in one, he always held his own. My number 10 was Dr. Chalice, played by Tom Atkins in Season of the Witch, Halloween 3. Valentine and Earl were at number 9, a Tremors pairing from Fred Ward and Kevin Bacon. Laurie Strode in Halloween H2O, Jamie Lee Curtis, of course, at the pinnacle of that character. Michelle, played by Mary Elizabeth Winstead in 10 Cloverfield Lane, the pseudo-sequel to Cloverfield. And R.J. McCready played by Kurt Russell in The Thing. Chuck, already, I mean, that's 10 different characters from...
Which is really interesting that we went
different
that
movies. Yeah, good stuff. Although Tom Atkins made both our list in 2 movies. I mean, how big
he
of
a... He goes into a horror hall of fame then.
All right, what is your number 5? We'll go into...
My number 5, I went with the character of Tommy Jarvis, played by, Tom Matthews, I think his name is, from Friday the 13th, The Final Chapter.
Mm-hmm.
That character's fleshed out. It's interesting. He's an interesting actor. And I love that film. That's maybe, beside the original, my favorite installment in that franchise.
Well, interesting you put him at number 5. I have a character, Tommy Jarvis was played by 3 different people.
Yes,
obviously Corey Feldman as a youngster.
He ain't going to make it, though.
No. My number 5 comes from a Friday the 13th movie, and Tommy Jarvis is a big part in that movie. But I went with Sheriff Mike Garris.
Yeah, he's cool, man.
In Jason Lives, part 6.
Yeah.
I don't know what it is about this movie, Chuck, and we both talked about it. It's a fast 90-minute action movie with Jason in there.
I agree.
Basically,
For whatever reason, whoever directed that movie did that differently. He did that completely differently.
And he sprinkled it with characters, including David Kagan. Nobody knows who David Kagan is, and he plays Sheriff Mike Garris. But he's the dad of the young girl who's in peril in this movie. And he doesn't have a lot of screen time in this, Chuck, but for some reason, this character appeals to me more than almost any other in the entire series, because he's almost based in some sort of reality of what the hell is going on with this monster killing people and why the hell am I in this movie. He has that undertone of irony, and he also has some killer lines, and unfortunately, one of the most immortal death scenes in all the entire movie.
I agree.
He gets his comeuppance. I didn't want him to die. You don't want that character to die in it, and that just goes to show you, this should have been a throwaway. Nobody cares about this character at all. But somehow they found a way to layer this guy to be more than just the lady's dad, but the sheriff of the town. I'm probably overpraising the performance from David Kagan in a movie that, let's face it, is played for schlock. But for some reason, this movie works so well. And a lot of it has to do with this character, not just the fact that it is a good movie overall. But if this character wasn't in this movie, Chuck, I'm not sure how much Jason 6 would be my second favorite Friday the 13th movie, you know? So that is my number 5.
My number 4, I went with the character of Ash from the Evil Dead movies, played by Bruce Campbell. It's an iconic character. And Sam Raimi, just his vision of this character is so entertaining.
But and a
Bruce,
lot
Bruce Campbell is just – he's so much fun in these films.
Great.
Yeah, he's just great.
He's a lot different, obviously, than the original Evil Dead. He's in the original Evil Dead. Now, this character is completely different when they would go back and remake it and then do the sequels. The reason I didn't put Ash on the list is because, basically the first one is the horror movie and the remake as well. And then after that, it just explodes into this, camp science fiction, time travel.
Well, Army of Darkness is a completely different tone.
Different tone.
But it's fun. It's fun.
And he, you know, he basically made his career out of being that character on the screen and off the screen, and it works. Even his, you know, little role in the Spider-Man, you know, Sam Raimi, he's very funny in that as the wrestling promoter. He's always been good. And a big cult following.
Agree.
A great pick. Almost made my list, but I kept it off. My number four is Danny Torrance, the young son in The Shining, the original Stanley Kubrick film that rides the big wheel around the hotel, Chuck.
Great scene.
Danny, do you want to play? And just the fact that he's so small, but he has such a conniving scene at the very end of the film when he figures out how to kill his dad with the maze. He, you know, never really see Danny Lloyd again, the young actor who would play Danny Torrance, lives in obscurity basically.
Well, that's because he couldn't act, but go ahead.
But the character itself is the perfect menace for a guy that's losing
his
mind.
Yeah, and that visual of him on a tricycle on that rug is unreal.
Unbelievable stuff.
If you haven't seen that movie in a movie theater, you have to see it in a theater for that scene.
Yep, it's great. And then when he sees the red rum turned around and figures out what it actually means, and the scenes with Scatman Crothers with using The Shining, great stuff. And the perfect, like I said, the perfect foe. Say, you know, all due respect to the mom, it was the kid that was going to undo Jack Torrance for sure. That's my number four.
Good pick, Mike. My number three is Laurie Strode, played by Jamie Lee Curtis. It was her first role theatrically in movies back in '78. She's just one of those actresses who, when she comes on screen, you self-identify her, with her likability. You don't want harm to come her way. And that goes such a long way, playing the hero, a heroine in a horror film.
Yeah, she's a naivete. She's the one you root for. She basically starts the whole subgenre of final girls. You know, the girl's always going to live at the end. And it all started really with Laurie Strode. And her performance is quite good. And she, like I said, I just felt my number three was a better horror hero because he would live on to play Dr. Loomis in other films too.
I was a toss up between the two. I went with her, but I can't argue with that.
Donald Pleasance as Dr. Loomis to me is the hero of all those films. He's the one that keeps it all together. And I always thought that the end of Halloween 2 was the perfect ending to the series, that it probably should have ended and that's it. But when he came back for 4 and the movie actually found its way and he's in it, he really helps that film get elevated into
he
more
sure
than
does.
Just. Yeah. And then, you know, obviously he overdid it with 5 and 6. He was, you know, his rent's due just like all of ours, Chuck.
Yeah, I know. I get it. And 6, he's really, I mean, let's be honest. He passed away right after filming. He's very old in part 6, but
and he dies off screen.
The legacy of the horror genre itself, Donald Pleasance easily is in the Hall of Fame playing that character, Dr. Loomis.
And just as, you know, it's almost like he knew the tone of what Halloween should have been.
He did.
He played his performance perfectly for that. It's totally straight, over the top at times. But when he flicks the lighter at the end of Halloween 2, Chuck, I really thought that was, you know, a lot of people have problems with Halloween 2, but I thought it perfectly.
No, I love Halloween 2.
Yeah, it really put the whole night into, wrapped it up perfectly.
I agree.
Listen, if you watch.
One thing about Halloween 1 and 2, they were filmed 2 or 3 years apart. It feels like a continuation. It really feels like one long movie.
And if you watch Halloween now like I did the other night, it really leaves you wanting more. I mean, we understand how the movie
ends. I agree. I completely agree.
But it really took balls for Carpenter to even end a movie that way. And you know, when the...
Well, you know, the audience at the end back in 78 had to say to himself, like, what happened? Who is he? Yeah. You know, it was fascinating.
Well, all right. So we've got a lot of great characters. We're up to our top two. Mine are probably... might surprise you a little bit. What is your number two?
My number two is Heather Langenkamp's Nancy in Nightmare on Elm Street. She played in the original Part 3 and New Nightmare. She's really underrated, Mike. She is so good in that first film. Like Jamie Lee Curtis, you cared about her.
You don't want her to die. Yep.
Her performance is really good.
Yep.
It's a more complex story than Halloween, because it makes you really think about dreams and what they mean. And Freddy's character is frightening, in that film. I mean, it really is a frightening character, and she really is a great foil to Robert Englund in that movie. And the end of that film when she battles him, I mean, she's really good. I can't speak highly enough of what she did in that film. And she's equal the reason that movie is a classic, along with Robert Englund's Freddy Krueger. So the character of Nancy is my number two from Nightmare on Elm Street.
Interesting, too, how they lured her back for three.
Yeah.
And the three that she's in are the three best of the series.
Oh, absolutely. And there's a reason, because she's a major quill in those movies.
And remember, she plays herself in New Nightmare, which
was a great movie, man.
Yeah, it's really good.
I love that movie.
Creepy movie.
Freddy's scary again in that movie.
Well, when she's not in it, the movie is based in just schlock.
I'll never understand the acceptance of how people really dig part four. I don't
get it.
It doesn't work for me.
I don't get none of those movies where he's just basically playing a comic character.
Yeah.
None of that. And that's why Shocker never worked for me, because
Shocker works for me, though, even though it's silly. I'm telling you, Shocker could have been a classic. The first 20 minutes of that film is so damn good. And then as Pinker becomes body jumping, it becomes sillier.
Yeah.
That's a good ending, though. He wraps it up nicely, but it is what it is.
It's a good pick. Number
Mitch Pileggi is a Horace Pinker. That's pretty good performance, too.
Wasn't there a rival movie just like that, too, right? That Lance Henriksen was in. It came out right around the same time, same concept.
Yeah.
But I can't remember what the name of
it
was. Anyway. All right, my number two, Chuck, could surprise you a little bit. The movie came out on my birthday back in 1987, and basically I've loved that movie ever since. And when you get the names of Fred Decker and Shane Black behind the film, it's no wonder that The Monster Squad is a tremendous cult classic that every kid and family should watch around Halloween. But to me, Tom Noonan's portrayal of Frankenstein's monster in this film sets it apart from every Frankenstein movie ever made. When he comes to the aid of the little girl,
that's really good.
Into that movie, and the performance Tom Noonan gives in this film, this movie does not deserve to have the amount of heart that it does, Chuck, and all of it is due to Tom Noonan. You know, we rave about Chris Sarandon and his vampire in Fright Night, but Duncan Rager's Count Dracula, he's menacing in this film, Chuck. There's some death scenes in this film that would surprise you, that you're basically watching the Goonies on Halloween.
Yes, but here's the thing, and you're raving about this film, and I agree, it's a really damn good movie. In terms of pop culture, though, it's not – if you ask 10 people, have you seen The Monster Squad, I'm telling you 8 or 9 would say no.
No, you're right.
And right? If you said how many seen The Goonies, you'd get 10 out of 10.
Well, a lot of it has to do with the fact that it only made $3.8 million when it came out.
There's one caveat to The Monster Squad, though. If you look at some of the dialogue, especially early on, it does have some homophobic dialogue in the movie.
Well, you got to remember who wrote it. Shane Black wrote
it. I know, and so it has some edge.
Yep, it does have edge, and I think that's part of the reason why I like it a little bit more. Look, it's got a running time of just under 85 minutes. It's got basically no names in the parts, but for some reason, again, this movie is a million times better than it should be.
Yeah, it's very entertaining.
You know, and Tom Noonan as Frankenstein's monster is just tremendous.
It really is the Goonies with classic monsters.
It is. It is. Right? It probably should have worked more, I think it didn't get the audience it deserved. Maybe that's the best way to put it, right?
Yeah, I agree.
You know,
listen, just because people watch something or not doesn't make the movie good or bad.
No, and you know,
it is what it is. To us, it's really good.
The special effects are done by Stan Winston in this movie, so it's not. You know, you're not watching it saying, "Well, this is cheesy B movie." No, there's a lot of good stuff in it, but it didn't make any money. I think there is a good cult classic following to it.
Yes, I agree.
There has always been talk of a remake of some sort. I know Rob Cohen was the original producer back in the day.
Yeah.
So it's never materialized. Good stuff. And, you know, Stephen Macht as the cop in it, too. Very recognizable character actor that worked. Look, again, we're probably overpraising movies that we shouldn't, but you need something to watch on Halloween. Monster Squad, you can watch with the entire family. Just ignore some of the language. It's a little iffy at times. All right, that's my number two. Chuck, who is your number one?
It's one of my all-time favorite movies, all-time favorite performances, and it's Jason Miller's Father Karras in The Exorcist.
I knew that was going to be his number one, by the way.
This movie, here's the deal, Mike. They don't make movies like this anymore. When you watch The Exorcist, it never really feels like a horror movie. It feels like a drama, docudrama that you're thrown into with horror elements. Horrible things happen in this movie. He is awesome in this film because the way he's written, he is a character on the edge.
Troubled man.
He's a troubled man. He has serious issues in his faith. His backstory is there. His performance is there. There's something about him as an actor I just embrace, and he's my number one. And I love the film, and I love him in this film.
Well, and I think Jason Miller, obviously, too, you know, never he had his own demons, too.
Yes, and that's what I think. And also, he doesn't have the conventional look of a movie star, right?
No,
not at all.
Nope. People might not. He also
he's even more like left of look of a Roy Scheider, like
yes.
More right.
Yeah. And obviously, he would play Arab Persasian and Rudy later on in his career.
Awesome.
And he actually played that character again. Many people don't know in one of the Exorcist sequels, right?
He did.
Although it's not credited as that character. I don't know if you've ever realized that.
Really?
Yeah,
it's killer. He's because he's possessed. They call him the Gemini Killer.
Yeah.
Brad Dourif. He passed between Brad Dourif and him playing the same character. It's very interesting.
All right, Chuck.
I like Exorcist 3, but I love The Exorcist.
Yeah, Exorcist is great. Max von Sydow could have very easily been picked as well. And Ellen Burstyn, too.
Yeah.
That character is very good.
Yeah.
It's a great movie. Again, extremely, extremely horrifying film, no doubt about it. All right, Chuck, I went with one of your films that's on your top 10, but a different character, and that's the character of Peter Vincent, played by Roddy McDowall.
I knew you would.
Awesome hero of Fright Night. The perfect casting of Roddy McDowall as a down on his luck, used to be popular vampire killer who's hosting those schlock overnight movies, much like Elvira used to do back in the day.
You know, it's interesting when they were writing the screenplay of that film, when that idea popped into the screenwriter's head, and then the execution of that is just perfect.
Yep. Tom Holland, of course, is the writer director who's done a lot of great things. My favorite part is when he gets laughed at and mocked by Chris Sarandon for not having faith anymore in the cross.
Awesome.
And then he finally realizes he does have the faith. The look in Roddy McDowall's eyes as he forcefully puts the cross up to Chris Sarandon, and he does realize, oh boy, I'm in trouble here. I just love that scene. And the amount of empathy he shows for Stephen Jeffries as he's dying as the wolf.
He plays that scene really well.
He plays that scene. He's crying. He feels almost like, should I save him? Or if I save him, then I'm going to die. I mean, so many layers to a character. Again, Fright Night works on so many. And
and his chemistry with Williams Riggs.
Oh, perfect. Awesome. And you got to remember, too, it's almost, this character, Peter Vincent, is not that much different than Roddy McDowall probably was at that time in his career, Chuck.
Maybe
he really wasn't doing much.
I agree with you. I agree with that. He probably could relate to that character.
Yeah, he probably pulled a lot of his own life.
I got a question for you. Give me your thoughts on the remake.
The remake I like. I thought
I
it was
too.
A little more sinister.
I know some people who hate it. I like what they did in terms of they reinvented a lot of the characters in that film.
Yeah, the mom plays a bigger part.
The Peter Vincent character is completely... a magician?
Yeah.
David Tennant, right?
Yeah.
I think some of that stuff's really good in that movie. I mean, I love the original, but I do like the remake.
Well, and then, Colin, what's his name? Colin Farrell. He's actually pretty good
in his
film, too, as the bad guy. They up the ante with the mom. And let's face it, Chuck, because, he died at way, way, way too young of an age. But the lead in Fright Night was played by Anton Yelchin.
And he's really good in it.
He's so good. He's always been good in
And in so is Brewster. Movies. I mean, the movie's good. It's a good remake.
Yeah,
it
is. I mean, again, you're going up against a classic.
Yeah,
And Toni Collette plays the mom. There's some good stuff in it. It shouldn't go unwatched. Let's just say that much.
I agree.
All right, let's go through our list again here. Why don't you go through 10 through 1 again?
Okay, number 10, Jonathan Parker, played by Peter Berg in Wes Craven's movie Shocker. Number 9, Ray Cameron, played by Tom Atkins in Night of the Creeps. Number 8, Charlie Brewster, played by William Ragsdale in Fright Night. Number 7, Patricia Tallman, playing Barbara in Tom Savini's remake of Night of the Living Dead. Losers Club, kid version, remake of It, number 6. Number 5, I have...
It's there.
Tommy Jarvis, played by Tom Matthews in Friday the 13th, the final chapter. Number 4, Ash, played by Bruce Campbell in Evil Dead. Number 7, Laurie Strode, played by Jamie Lee Curtis in Halloween. Number 2, Heather Landekamp's Nancy in Elm Street. And number 1, Father Karras, played by Jason Miller in the immortal classic, The Exorcist, the greatest horror film of all time.
Great pick. My number 10 was Dr. Chalice, played by Tom Atkins in Season of the Witch, Halloween 3. Valentine and Earl, the partnership in Tremors. I just chuckle every time I think of those two morons, Fred Ward and Kevin Bacon. Jamie Lee Curtis as Laurie Strode in Halloween H2O. Mary Elizabeth Winstead as Michelle in 10 Cloverfield Lane. R.J. McCready, Kurt Russell in The Thing. It's my number 6. At number 5, you won't know the actor's name, David Kagan, who played Sheriff Mike Garris in Jason's Live, the Friday the 13th Part 6. Danny Lloyd as Danny Torrance in The Shining. Donald Pleasence, the immortal Dr. Loomis in all of the Halloween movies. Tom Noonan's turn as Frankenstein's monster in Monster Squad. And then, of course, Roddy McDowall as Peter Vincent, Fright Night, Chuck. You know, the list is great.
This is fun.
A lot of days before Halloween and a lot of different movies thrown in there. I am shocked that you don't have anybody from the remake of Dawn of the Dead in this list. I thought Ving Rhames.
Listen, I easily could have did that.
I was a little surprised.
I could. I was going to do either him or Ken Forte from the original. Both great. I mean, there's a lot of different people we could put on these lists, but I had fun doing this.
I would say this, Gregory Peck would have made my list if he didn't die at the end.
Yeah, he's really good.
Robert Thorne in The Omen. That was such a bummer.
Again, they don't make actors like that anymore.
They don't end movies like that anymore either. They don't.
No. All right.
Well, I hope you guys enjoyed this. We'll come up with another horror theme next go around. Chuck, it's always been a pleasure. We'll do this again next week.
Thanks, Mike. Pleasure back.
Thanks for listening to Movie Maniacs. Download one of our archived episodes. Be sure to subscribe to us wherever you listen to podcasts. Podcasts by Federated Media. Podcasts by Federated Media.